Happy holidays, everyone. I'm here with Judah, December 26th, early morning, and we've got some football to talk about, which is not typically the case early on a Thursday morning, but there were two games yesterday on Christmas. Had the Chiefs and the Steelers, the Ravens and the Texans. So we're just going to start off quickly with some takeaways before we jump into a loaded slate in Week 17. But for Pittsburgh, Kansas City, I think, well, neither of these games was all that intriguing. Right? Both comfortable wins for the Chiefs and the Ravens. For the Steelers, like, we've talked about their secondary is beatable if you can mitigate the pass rush, and we saw that with Kansas City. It looks like Kansas City's starting to figure some things out in the passing offense. They get Hollywood Brown back. I think that helps. Somehow the ankle injury has gotten a better version out of Mahomes than what we're seeing for much of the year. So what were your big takeaways from that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Chiefs, number one, are just like, they have to get rid of the ball quick, and Mahomes has had two of his quicker time to throw games. Obviously, the like Chiefs offense was firing yesterday, right? Mahomes threw for 320 yards, didn't even get like a two-minute drill to prop that up. Like, they were good, and I think the defense also, without Chris Jones, I mean, look, a lot of this has to do with Russell Wilson's tendency to hold the ball for too long, but they had five sacks, which is the most they've had all season. I think, again, it speaks to Russell Wilson, which is, I guess, kind of the takeaway. Like, when you look at a graphic on screen of like, oh, this team with and without George Pickens, and it's like, oh, they've been 6 points better. And I like, it's like, yeah, there are obviously some other confounding factors here. And it was a reminder of just like, even with George Pickens, this is an offense that's going to live and die by the deep ball. And if you're hitting on the deep ball, that's great. And like, you also can't have Russ turnovers. Obviously, the combo of a hole to take out a touchdown to an interception, like, that's devastating for the results of the game. And this game probably plays out very differently had Russ not thrown the pick there, or had they gotten in cleanly. But I think it's just, it reminds me, like, what type of team the Steelers are, and like, I think in fall they can be great and they have an awesome pass rush, but like, when you get to late December, January, like, it's not enough, and you're gonna have teams like the Chiefs who are going to be able to, as you said, like, mitigate that and still score on offense. The Chiefs, it's going to be, you know, we do this every year of like, Chiefs struggling in the regular season, right? That TikTok comes out 3 weeks ago about like, oh, the Chiefs are frauds. And since then, they've covered the spread each of the last three games fairly easily. The offense looks back. I think we're setting up for another great AFC duel between, I don't know if it's going to be the Chiefs and Ravens, Chiefs and Bills, whomever it might be, but I think that's going to be an awesome showdown.
Yeah, the Pickens thing, that the drive with the interception that you were talking about was the full Pickens experience. Right? He had the 40-yard catch on that drive. Great catch. Showed his hands super late. One-on-one against Trent McDuffie. No separation at all. Like, that's the classic Pickens downfield catch. And then on the same drive, he gets jammed at the line of scrimmage, doesn't run his route, and Justin Reed's free to slide over and intercept the pass. So, like, it looks like we're gearing up for the Steelers to probably get the 5 seed, the Texans to probably get the 4 seed. So that's probably going to be the matchup we're going to get in the first round. And, like, that, even on the road, that's a game that the Steelers can win, given what we've seen from Houston. The offense has been disappointing all year, has not lived up to the preseason expectations, given what we saw last year. Too many negative plays on early downs. That's been discussed ad nauseum. We've discussed it. Greg Olsen was discussing it on the broadcast yesterday. And then defensively, I think this probably says more about the Ravens' offense than it does against Houston's defense. Because with the way they're playing right now, with the way Lamar's playing right now, adding Derrick Henry in there, so you can't overplay the Lamar keep, which we saw the Steelers 2 weeks ago. They tried to take away the Lamar keep. Derrick Henry gashed him. We saw Derrick Henry gash the Texans kind of right down their throat last week. Like, if they're not making mistakes, which they have been up there in penalties, they will self-destruct at times. But if they're not doing that, this is a very difficult offense to beat.
Yeah, I had the same takeaway. That, like, this, I think, says a lot more about the Ravens. And just, like, they're matchup agnostic going up against the defense. Like, they can score against anyone and beat you in so many different ways. I mean, like, they were moving the ball on offense. Lamar Jackson is having, like, an incredible season statistically. I'm not making a case for the MVP. Frankly, I don't really care about that. Like, statistically speaking, is having probably the best quarterback season so far this year. Like, he threw 9 attempts in the first half of that game, and he only had one rush, and they were still scored 17 points, left a bunch on the table. And then, like, Lamar gets going on the ground. Like, they have so many ways to beat you. And this is a really good Texans defense. They've been great, whether it's stopping the run, but it just doesn't matter when Jackson, number one, and like, I think that the real difference between Jackson this year and years prior is he's, like, really not taking many sacks, which is to your point about the mistakes. And like, Jackson's actually changed his scrambling style, where he's not looking to run as much as he used to, which I think also, like, a function of taking fewer sacks, because a lot of those sacks are just, like, failed runs from previous seasons. But, like, I think you're exactly right. Like, if this team is not making mistakes and not shooting themselves in the foot, like, they are going to move the ball on offense. I'm not so sold. I'm curious your thoughts here on the defensive side of things. Like, since they moved Kyle Hamilton back to deep safety in week 10, they've been the best pass defense in the league by various counts. I'm not sure how much of that is just, like, well, when you don't play great quarterbacks, and I do think they're definitely directionally better, but I'm not sold on them kind of, like, having this elite defense. If they have the number one defense in football, like, I don't know, should they be underdogs in any game? Probably not. Their offense is probably the best, but I don't think the defense is as good as their recent play suggests, though that would certainly be scary for the rest of the teams in the NFL if that actually is the case.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers were able to move the ball on them 2 weeks ago. Right? It ended up being a 17-point win, but the Steelers moved the ball down the field. Wilson fumbled in the red zone. There were a couple things. There were three fumbles in that game early that bounced the Ravens' way. So, like, and even yesterday, the Texans scored 2 points, but there were receivers open downfield. Like, I think generally the Ravens played well, but that was a bad C.J. Stroud game. C.J. Stroud was missing passes that he typically hasn't missed. And when you combine that with the other factors on the Houston offense, that's how you get to 2 points in the game.
Yeah.
So I tend to agree. Like, I think the defense has improved, and I think the changes they made on the back end have made a difference. And you've seen that with these. You saw it when Mike McDonald first got there. You've seen it a little bit in Seattle this year. Zach Orr has been on that coaching staff for a while, but obviously it's a similar style of defense. So maybe there's something there where it just takes a while for that communication to gel. They were towards the top of the league in blown coverages early in the year, and you've seen less of that. So I think there is something there, but I agree it's not a top-flight defense. And I think we've seen over the past couple weeks, even with the Eagles last week, which we can jump into a little bit when we talk about the Commanders later, but that defense was playing lights out. They weren't giving up anything. And then Jalen Hurts goes down, second half, the Commanders are moving the ball downfield against them at will. So elite defense, it's tough to lean on that unless it's a 2015 Broncos-type unit, and I just don't know if we're in that NFL anymore.
Yeah.
We can jump into it. We'll start out with some of the Saturday games. We got the Seahawks and Bears tonight. Not going to hit on that. But just quick thoughts. The Bears have been atrocious defensively since their bye week. So there's little reason that Seattle shouldn't be able to put up points in this game. But we're not going to go in depth there. We're going to start off with the first Saturday game. We got three Saturday games this week. Smaller Sunday slate with all the other days, but hey, who's going to argue with more days of football. So we got Chargers at Patriots. Chargers are 4.5-point favorites, 43.5-point total. And I know you've been kind of going to the well with these past games against the Patriots. Is that what we're looking at again here this week?
Actually, I'm not. I'm going to the other side here. Justin Herbert's really struggled against man coverage. He's got like a negative 0.10 EPA per play. What's interesting also is that like the style changes. It's less of, I actually care less about the kind of output stat here and more about the style of play. His ADOT jumps about 4 yards. It makes sense. He's looking way further downfield, but he's been kind of far worse. I think a lot of the question is like, and the Patriots have in recent weeks started to use Christian Gonzalez more as a shadow type player rather than just having him sit. I mean, like, so there was the game against the Rams where he was just covering DeMarcus Robinson all day, and Nacua and Kupp each went for over 100 yards. I'm not sure he's going to travel with Ladd McConkey to the slot. And I think that's obviously still the kind of pathway for the LA offense to move the ball. And usually I think Palmer is that kind of like sneaky guy in man. I've bet on him a bunch of times, including against the Broncos team, which plays a lot of man coverage last week. I'm not going to be in this one, nor am I kind of too terrified of Gonzalez, but I do think there's a wide range of outcomes for Herbert, and most of his success this season has come against zone coverages, and I really just have McConkey. Like, Quentin Johnston's numbers against man coverage are laughable. He's like averaging like half a yard per route run. It's kind of absurd. So I actually think, and the market has moved a lot off that initial number. And then like Drake May has really, really come into his own. I mean, we were on him very early in the season and talking about how he can kind of mitigate a bad situation. But I think there's a real spot to again play. And I was on this last week against the Bills, a Patriots tail here against the Chargers defense, which looked great. They don't generate a massive pass rush. They're not like in the top of the league there. I think a lot of it is kind of their defensive performance is a function of their opponents. But May's done a great job at kind of like mitigating a bad situation. Like, his offensive line's dreadful. And that's always going to be the case this season. But I think we're getting a little bit of a larger sample of plays where he's going to be kept clean this week. And I think that's also the when kept clean, that's the area where he's going to look further downfield and kind of make or has the potential to make a lot of these unbelievable throws. Right. He's made a couple of these deep passes. There's one against the Cardinals, then the touchdown to Booty this past week, and his props are still very, very low. And I think if we get some more volume, and the reason why I also think the Patriots can kind of get more volume is if you think about, right, Herbert's throwing a lot further downfield and his completion percentage goes way down in man coverage. So it's like we each got a wide range of outcomes here. Would it be shocking if they can beat the New England man defense? No. Do they really have, like, you're just relying really on one guy, I think, which is like a little bit more fragile than the kind of the typical path that I would like to attack, which is why I'm on the other side. But when it comes down to it, like, Herbert's productions come against zone. I think we're in a spot where we can get a lot of incompletions because Herbert's going to be throwing the ball way downfield. His completion percentage goes way down. And Drake May is just, I think he's an underrated quarterback relative to market. And if we start to see a lot more of the, you know, passing attempts, and he's been kind of kept below, I think his average is like 29. But if that number jumps to like 33, 34 in a spot where the Chargers are easier to pass against, they don't have the same pass rush that's been causing May. I mean, he's been doing a great job getting around it, but still, just when the sample size is so, when you're under pressure so much, if that kind of trickles down a bit, I think this is a spot for May or the Patriots to win through May. And you can get some, the props are very, very low. I mean, like 275 right now is 4-1. You combine that in a game script with the New England winning, and you can get some pretty juicy same game parlays there.
When I was looking at this, the over jumped out. at 43.5 because I am kind of with you on New England. I think they're going to be able to move the ball against this Chargers defense that has looked more vulnerable in recent weeks. We saw it with the Broncos on Thursday night last week, especially early in that game. The Chargers tightened up a little bit in the second half, but the Broncos were able to run on them early. They were able to get some of these quick throws with yards after the catch. And another data point to back up the May love you have. This season, against single high, the Patriots are 26th in EPA per pass play since he took over. Against two high, they're 7th. And so they've been much better against two high. You're going to see a lot of that against the Chargers. I also think it's a decent spot for Ramondre Stevenson. He hasn't been getting a ton of carries, but his line is set at like 42 yards. When I was looking yesterday, the Chargers are 26th in EPA allowed per run play over the last five games. Patriots are a big gap scheme rushing offense. The Chargers are outside the top 20 in yards per carry allowed against gap schemes. Like, if they are playing from ahead in this game, similar to what we saw early against Buffalo, like, this is a spot where I think that line is low enough where you can take a shot at Stevenson. And then on the other side, I probably have a little bit more interest in Herbert and the Chargers passing game than you do. It might be more high variance, but outside of the man zone stuff, Herbert's been great against the blitz, second in passing grade against the blitz this year. He's been great from a clean pocket, third in passing grade from a clean pocket this year, behind only Burrow and Lamar. And the Patriots are a big blitz team, but they don't get pressure. Right? They're towards the bottom of the league in pressure rate, towards the top of the league in blitz rate. So if you're in a situation where most quarterbacks, if you're playing against a defense that is blitzing a lot but not getting pressure, that's good for every quarterback, right? You have less coverage defenders, and you don't get the negative impacts of the team sending more rushers. So I do have some interest in Herbert, especially if the Patriots are putting up points and keeping this game competitive, because it's going to push them to pass a little bit more. I do think they're going to get J.K. Dobbins back this week. It looks like he's going to come back for the first time since week 12. I don't really have much interest in their run game just because, like, I don't know what Dobbins' workload is going to be. The Patriots have been a beatable run defense. We saw that last week with James Cook, but like I just don't know how they're going to split up the touches. So I'm primarily interested in Herbert and McConkey. We've talked about McConkey against man. Patriots are going to play man. He's going to be in the slot. Christian Gonzalez has played less than 20% of his snaps in the slot, so it could be a situation where McConkey's clearly their top threat. They move Gonzalez into the slot on key downs, something like that. But I think most of the game he's going to avoid him. Marcus Jones also potentially out, their starting slot corner. Since he's been out, they've moved Jonathan Jones back into the slot and put someone who I'm blanking on their name right now on the outside, Alex Austin, something like that. So that's the best matchup, and McConkey's not going to see a ton of that. But I still have interest in his overs and Herbert's overs in a game that I think should go over this 43.5 mark.
Yeah, you did, by the way, nail Austin's, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if you got someone in the ear, or it's just
I'm getting fed info.
Yeah, exactly. You bring up the blitz, which is interesting. This is the last thing I'll say on this, because their blitz rates have like really decreased in recent weeks. But their season long averages are like a heavy blitz team. Last 3 weeks, 16%, 25%, 25%. The weeks before that, we're talking about like plenty of weeks, 64% blitz rate, 50% blitz rate. That I'm curious kind of how they choose to attack. But I guess to summarize, Justin Herbert's completion percentage against man is like 45% right now. There's just that is like, can he hit on a bunch of deep balls? Yes. Is that like, as you rightfully point out, like there are a lot of competing factors here, right? They're like, Justin Herbert, he's like, there aren't that many man dropbacks, and they like could also be defense dependent, and like maybe he was under pressure in more of those spots than you'll see here. So it's kind of always weighing the different stats and kind of seeing what do you think is most relevant. I think there's a chance for New England to run a lot of plays just by virtue of how the Chargers will attack, but I see both sides here. And certainly I would be interested in Ladd McConkey one way or another. And I think that the Chargers can still move the ball. It's just we're also going to see a lot of three and outs as well.
Last point before we move on. The Patriots, since May took over, have been a top 10 red zone pass rate team. You can get Drake May over 1.5 touchdowns at plus 188. Like, that's something I'm going to have interest in this spot as well.
Yeah, I like that.
Another Saturday game, the afternoon, the middle game, Broncos at Bengals. Game with a lot of playoff implications. Cincinnati needs to win. They need help the rest of the way to get that 7 seed. If the Broncos win this game, they're in. They clinch a playoff spot. They do play the Chiefs in Week 18, so that could be a game where the Chiefs have the 1 seed locked up and are able to rest some guys. So maybe the Broncos get some help anyways in Week 18, but I'm sure they want to win this game to avoid that scenario. And this with both teams having sort of real reason to go all out here, this is a Bengals offense that we've talked about multiple times. With T. Higgins on the field, best offense in the NFL, potentially. Like, right up there with the Ravens. Yards per play with Higgins on the field, 6.5 for reference. The Ravens this season are at 6.4. Lions 6.0, Packers 6.0. Like, the Bengals have been able to move the ball. The offense is not the reason they're 7-8. It's the defense. So against the Broncos defense here that has been good this year, is probably going to get Riley Moss back this week after missing 3 weeks. So you get more of that full strength Broncos defense. Something I'm interested in, your thoughts in, how the Broncos defense has shifted without Moss, and whether you think they go back to what they were doing pre-Moss injury. So with Moss in the lineup, weeks 1 to 11, he got hurt mid-game week 12. Fifth highest man coverage rate in the NFL. Last 5 weeks, since week 12, 21st highest man coverage rate in the NFL. So they've come off that a lot due to the cornerback injury and the depth they've had to go to there. They've also been playing a lot more too high over that stretch. Top 10 in too high rate since week 12. Before that, they were 27th weeks 1 to 11. And this is a Bengals offense that typically sees a lot of too high, just because teams are trying to keep those explosive plays out with Chase and Higgins on the field. They've seen more too high than any other offense in the NFL besides the Dolphins this year. So I think that the Broncos are not going to go back to a big single-high man coverage team immediately with Moss coming back in this matchup against Cincinnati, where teams typically play more too high anyways. But how do you look at a situation like that where a team drastically changes what they're doing with one player out of the lineup and then he comes back, and kind of how you look at that the first week back?
Yeah, usually, I mean, it kind of depends on the situation, as you illustrate. Like, I think this would be very different if they were playing, I don't know, Aiden O'Connell, then...
Aiden O'Connell's been balling the last
game. Aiden O'Connell hasn't been balling. No disrespect to Aiden O'Connell. In fact, I was even thinking about mentioning some Aiden O'Connell stuff later on. But people like are going to change you're going to change your defense if you're going up against Mahomes. You're going to change your defense if you're going up against Burrow. But it is interesting, and like I do, the point I'll make here is that you can run some danger when you are. You know, when you're betting, it's week 17. You've got like as good a sample of data as you're going to possibly have. Like, using the full season numbers is not always the most relevant, because it is like, it's one thing to like, there's a statistical practice that's happening, right? And you like always want to use the best data set, and that is like best practice, so to speak. But also understanding how NFL organizations are run and how coaches, if you like ask anyone who has worked for teams, they like go through self-reviews, and it's not static. The way they play changes over the course of a season, whether it's in this case for an injury or like, you know, they do a review of like the last 4 weeks and they're like, hey, we should be playing our defense a little bit different. And like, teams change. They change in their how they play. This is like, football's a matchup game. It's also you have to deal with that. But it's very difficult to like, the Denver Broncos defense is going to play, I think, very different this week than they were from weeks 1 through 12. And like, that's a real phenomenon, and there's good reason to kind of rely on that smaller sample of games that's more recent, which I think is, has more signal in like how they're going to play. And I think you're absolutely right. We're going to see a lot more of the two high looks, less man. They also, their blitz rate's gone way down, which makes sense, right? If you think about how they wanted to play initially, it was like, we're going to blitz a lot. We're going to get after the quarterback quick, and we're going to rely on our guys to win. And we're going to shorten the time frame by which our players need to play coverage, because we're going to get pressure a lot quicker. But like, you can't do that if you're, you know, playing Levi Wallace. And I know that they benched him, but like, if Levi Wallace is playing the slot against Jerry Jeudy, he's gonna go off for 200 yards. Like that's not a sustainable way of winning. But I think the Broncos, the real interesting question is like, what do they do after, right? And like, what do they do if they're playing? And you want to talk about motivation? I'm sure they want that 5 seed, because you want to be playing the Texans in the AFC right now. Like, what do you do when you go up against Stroud? This week, I think it's going to be more of the same from what we've seen the past couple of weeks. And quite frankly, like, I don't think it matters. The Bengals are probably still going to be able to move the ball. Would it be worse if they played a lot of single high? Maybe. Maybe we'd see a lot more, many more explosives. But I don't think that the defense is going to change all that much from what we've seen in recent weeks.
Yeah, I wanted to have that conversation because I think it's interesting, but ultimately I don't think it matters in this game. Like, I think the Bengals passing offense is going to have success regardless of what the Broncos do, and we've seen that pretty much all year. The one thing I'm kind of concerned about is, I typically, elite wide receiver versus elite cornerback, I typically don't move off something because of that, but Pat Surtain is awesome, right? And if he's moving with Ja'Marr Chase, which I think there's a good chance he does in this week, the Broncos have done that. The Bengals will move Chase into the slot. They'll try to get him away from him. But if Chase's line is set at 90, which I think it is, like, I side with the under there, because I think they're going to try to take him away with Surtain. Sertan's number one in our advanced coverage grade at cornerback. He's been having an awesome year. He hasn't allowed more than 40 yards in coverage in a single game all season. We've seen receivers can't have big games against Denver. You mentioned Jerry Jeudy. Like, that can't happen when he's away from Surtain. But I think the Broncos are going to try to limit the snaps where Surtain's away from Chase. And that just gives me more interest in these other main pieces in the Bengals passing offense. Higgins, Gesicki, and Chase Brown out of the backfield. Like, Chase Brown has one of the best roles in the NFL for a running back right now. He's rarely coming off the field, pass game, run game. And in the pass game, he's an explosive player in space. And the Broncos are top 10 in receiving yards allowed to running backs this year. They've allowed the sixth most receiving yards to running backs. So with his line in the low 20s, like, that's something I'm interested in, potentially even bumping out to 50 in an SGP or something. And I think the Bengals passing offense is going to be able to move the ball regardless of what the Broncos do on defense. And then the question becomes, can the Broncos match against a bad Bengals defense, which we've seen a lot of the year teams be able to do that? I think I lean Bengals -3. I talked last week about too high has given the Broncos issues, the Broncos pass game issues. They were able to have some early success against the Chargers, but it was like a 55-yard swing pass to Marvin Mims. Like, I don't know how real that was. That being said, I do have some interest in Marvin Mims as well this week. The Bengals have gotten killed by yards after the catch over the last 4 or 5 weeks. They're bottom three in the NFL in yards after the catch allowed per reception. The Broncos have been using Mims in more of a featured role. Like, they've been using him in the backfield on those swing passes a ton. He's had some big plays the last 4 or 5 weeks on those plays. He obviously had the 90-yard touchdown against Cleveland on a seam from the slot. But I have interest in Marvin Mims over Prost. But in general, I think the Bengals are able to cover this 3 number.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Bengals. I just think that, to your point, like, they're going to be able to score regardless. And so much of the market value also from the Broncos kind of is relying on a great defense, which has also struggled against good teams. And I think a lot of it has to do with the opponents they've played. I also just like, and it's, I think, rare to hear me say it, like, what the Broncos did in the first half versus the second half is they stopped running the ball in the second half. Right? They like had that great first drive where they're giving touches to everyone, and like Bo Nix was just dropping back to pass, and I don't know if it was schematic or he like, I mean, clearly has some limitations throwing the ball deep, but like they were basically using their pass game as an extension of the run game. He had a ridiculously low depth of target. You're like going to be limited passing by doing that, and like they're having a lot of success on the ground, and I think they can have a lot of success on the ground against Cincinnati. In that case, I think there's also a legitimate pathway of like a fairly slow game where Denver has a lot of success on the ground and they try and just keep the ball out of Burrow's hands with like long sustained drives and not a very explosive offense, which is like the worst thing for, you know, betting on like parlays or something. But we've talked about many times kind of how fragile that game style is, just because you like need to march down the field and convert rather than like Cincinnati, who I anticipate is just going to be able to rip off a bunch of chunk plays. And also, like, if you go down 10-0 early in a game, maybe, you know, whatever, you get some stop early, Cincinnati goes down and scores, like, you're kind of taken away from that game plan. But I'm with you. I like Cincinnati here. I do see a kind of alternative pathway of Denver, if they are going to win, doing so on the ground. But that's also not how they played offense, and you don't want to kind of coach your bets here. They've been one of the higher pass rate, pass over expected teams. So
yeah, it's,
I don't know
if they're able to eat drives and keep the ball out of Cincinnati's hands, it's especially harming to Bengals SGPs because Burrow's line is already set at 270. Like, there's not a ton of room to go over that. He needs high passing volume, and they're going to pass a ton, but like
his attempts prop is higher than anyone else. Yeah. Right? Like they let him rip it 45 times. But yeah, I'm curious. Like, I think Estime is good. Like, he's legitimately a good running back.
I would have interest in Broncos running backs. But McLaughlin's coming back this week, it looks like. So we're back in a situation where, like, I don't know who to play. Like, they do the hot hand thing. Before McLaughlin went out, he had a game where he had like 80 plus rushing yards against Cleveland. So it's like one guy rips off a 10, an 8, a 7-yard carry on a drive, and it's like, okay, that's the guy who's going to get the ball the rest of the game, and I don't know who that is. So yeah. That's the biggest concern there.
So the last thing I'll say on this game, because this is an island game, we can pay attention to this, and maybe that's a live angle to monitor. Just bet on the Broncos hot hand running back.
Yeah, just do it. Win money. We'll move over to Sunday. Miami Dolphins at Cleveland Browns. Dolphins are 6.5-point favorites, 40.5-point total. And we talked about the Bengals Browns game last week, and DTR not being a real NFL quarterback. And I think we saw that in that game last week. It's bad. Like, since last year when he's been on the field, the Browns are at negative 0.255 EPA per play. For context, that's worse than every team in the NFL this year. That's worse than the worst team last year, the Jets. It's bad, right? So I like on that alone, and the Dolphins don't have a bad defense. The Dolphins have a solid defense. So on that alone, I have interest in Dolphins minus 6.5. The question I think for me then became, like, how much faith do I have in this Dolphins offense to push it out on the alts? And I think I landed on. It's interesting because anytime you saw single high last year, it's like, okay, the Dolphins are going to crush this. They were third in EPA per play against single high. Tua was hitting those deep shots to Hill and Waddle. This year, that hasn't been the case. They're 22nd in EPA per play against single high. And we know that's what we're going to get against Cleveland. Like, I went through and looked game by game to see if Cleveland really deviated from that. They have not. I think the lowest single high rate they played was 57% against the Bengals, which is still a high rate. So against Miami, like, maybe it's in that ballpark, but still, it's over half the time you're going to be seeing it. So if you're betting on these Tua to Hill kind of SGPs, it's more of a hope than it is based in the data. I think this year, which I might bet it just based on the hope, just because we've seen it and they're still who they are. And this is a Browns defense that has gone beat deep. But there's not a ton of data to this year to point to the idea that that's a sure thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is true. There also is not a ton of data of Tua playing against single high teams. Fair. I would love if Waddle were back for this game. But I don't even think that's kind of the main play. I think the main play is just that, like, as you said, and DTR did, I think, miss like an estimated practice yesterday. I'm not sure the severity of that injury.
He picked up a calf injury, but Stefanski said if he's healthy, he's going to be the starter. Winston was also limited for what it's worth. So,
yeah. Assuming DTR plays, it's just like, this guy is not a serious quarterback. I'm not here to kind of dump on quarterback play, but just like statistically speaking, as you said, they've been the worst offense in the NFL, and like the surroundings now are way worse than they were where the majority of that sample comes from. The offensive line is hurt. The receivers are not as good. No part about this is a good offense, and like that just leaves so many plays for the Dolphins to work with, and like they're passing so much. And I still am willing to yes, it's not necessarily there. It's not like they've been bad against single high, right? They've been better against two high, but that's also a reflection of like how many dropbacks they've had, where like two has been better against two high, but that's just like majority of the games that they've played. I think that they still can have plenty of success, and they had games where they did dominate single high, and like Tua's PFF grade against single high is still great. There's a much bigger discrepancy kind of in the output of the like things like EPA than it is otherwise. But you just want to bet on talent, I think, for a same game parlay. And like, I think your point is right about if this were it's a twofold bet, right? If I like liking on the Dolphins spread and the Dolphins alt, because I am like also really just wanting to sell DTR, and just like I think this is a spot where the market struggles in kind of building a projection, because this is real points in real games, and like I think there's a lot of kind of mass on a distribution of like of the Browns scoring like 10 points, in which it's not going to be that difficult to cover. And then there's also kind of just like alt scenario where you say like, okay, it's not found in the data yet, but that is not necessarily disqualifying if like we have a larger sample of like a couple of years before that. And like, obviously the teams are not entirely the same, but there's also like, we know when you play single high against Tyreek Hill, there's no one to guard him, and not that much needs to happen. I mean, they like just missed on a couple of deep shots. Tua had that incredible throw, probably honestly the best I've ever seen from him, where he's just like under pressure, finds Hill in the back of the end zone, who just drops it. But even so, they can win in multiple ways, whether it's just from a ton of play volume because the Browns can't sustain any offense, or just like, I still want to bet on Hill and Tua against single high, even if they haven't been great this year. Like, there are a lot of kind of confounding factors here. It would not be shocking to see. And just looking at the fundamentals of like, what is Tyreek Hill is still a great wide receiver, right? He didn't just like get a lot worse. His advanced numbers are not that much worse. I think there's a tails case where we're not talking here about what is most likely to happen, but there is like a spot of like what could happen when we're betting on like SGPs that are not medians. And that's where I have interest in the Dolphins passing game. In addition to just like, maybe it's a midwit meme, DTR bad. And like, if you're going to imply the Browns to score a couple touchdowns, I think there's a legitimate pathway to them not scoring a lot, if at all.
I mean, last week against the Bengals, which have really struggled on defense, like they couldn't couldn't do anything. They were able to move the ball a little bit in the second half, but the game was kind of out of hand at that point. The other thing that we didn't really hit on that I do have some interest in, if Waddle is out again, Malik Washington led the Dolphins in routes run last week. Like, they are a two wide receiver team, and he is the other wide receiver. Like, they'll play some other guys on rundowns, especially like River Craycraft will get in, but like it's Hill and Washington. And he was super productive at Virginia. Hasn't had really any big games necessarily this year, but like made a nice catch on the sideline last week. Like I think he's a guy who can produce in this matchup as well. If he's seeing that type of play volume, and the Dolphins are getting more plays because the Browns can't move the ball. The other part of it is Achan has been a massive part of this passing game. The Browns have allowed fewer receiving yards to running backs than any other defense in the NFL this year. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball much. Like, this is a Browns defense that isn't necessarily great against the run, but they're top five against outside zone. That's primarily what Miami wants to do. Miami really hasn't been able to run the ball well at all this year. I know Achan broke the long touchdown run last week against the Niners, but I don't think they're going to be able to run well. I don't think they're going to be able to get the ball to Achan as much as we've seen in prior weeks. So that really, if Tua is having a big game, that really concentrates it on Hill, Washington, Jonnu Smith. So there's kind of a clear path to high target volume for all of those guys.
Yeah, they were even using Achan as like a straight out wide receiver.
Yeah,
they were just lining him out wide, which was
he caught like that. He caught like the classic Hill Waddle dig route last week over the middle of the field, and I saw it was Achan. I'm like, what? Why? That was Achan 20 yards downfield catching that ball.
I had the same thing of like watching. I thought, wait a second, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a Malik Washington over bet last week. I was like 30.5 or something, and I see him at 29, 28 or 29 at the end of the first half, and I was like, all right, awesome. And, He laid a goose in the second, but I think that's a great shot of a guy. And the Dolphins coaches love him. Yeah. They absolutely rave about him. Would not be shocked to see him get peppered with looks in the spot.
Yeah. Before we move on, side note on that game, just so I can vent for a second. Patrick Taylor, they set his line at 34.5, and he was the only running back who saw the field. They did not play any other running back, and he didn't get there. And it was partially because the Niners were losing the whole game, but that was my biggest bet.
And the line closed
of last
at like
week.
47.5 or something.
That was my biggest bet of last week. It was sharp. I got so much closing line value, and I got killed. So, but we'll move on. It's probably the game of the week, at least the game of the Sunday slate. Packers at Vikings. Vikings are 1.5-point favorites at home, 48.5-point total. And when I was going through this game, I think the Packers are going to be able to – they're going to put up points. They're going to be able to move the ball. It's really a question of how you think that comes. So they played back in week four. The Vikings jumped out to a 28-0 lead, and then the Packers came storming back. Jordan Love had 54 pass attempts in that game, ended up with almost 400 passing yards. So – like, I think that path is still there. I don't think the Vikings are going to jump up 28-0. But I think, like, Green Bay passing can get there if that's how they decide to attack the Vikings, which is how most teams have decided to attack the Vikings this year. Right, teams typically don't run much against them. They've been playing from behind. The Vikings have numbers in the box because they have all these funky looks at the line of scrimmage. They're blitzing at a high rate, which includes run plays. So teams typically haven't run the ball on them, but we know Green Bay wants to run the ball more than just about any other offense in the NFL, and especially early in games. And good rushing teams, I think there is a sneaky case for good rushing teams to have success against the Vikings because they're playing with lighter bodies. They're like 30% dime. It's the highest rate in the NFL. Brian Flores is a madman. He'll throw out like NASCAR packages with five pass rushers on a normal second down, right? It's something you typically don't see. So if you can catch them in those looks, like, I do think there's rushing upside. And I have much more interest in Josh Jacobs in this spot. Last week, like, it was a great, on paper, great spot against the Saints, right? His rushing line was set at 90. Saints have been a bad run defense all year. On the opposite end of the Patrick Taylor call, I ended up calling that one perfectly. I had Jacobs' first quarter over rushing yards, Jacobs' first half touchdown, Jacobs under full game rushing yards, because like the Packers were going to get out to a big lead in that game, and then Emmanuel Wilson was going to come in. I bet Emmanuel Wilson's over, so at least I got that one.
Were you sweating that last touchdown as no. I was?
I didn't bet.
I've got some massive SGPs, which need Emmanuel Wilson 50 yards and a touchdown. And it's like a 27-0 game, 4 minutes left, and I'm like, you know, that's the beauty of betting, I guess.
Yeah, no, it keeps you in the whole game. I just had over 13.5. I didn't push it out, so that was not a sweat for me at all. I didn't have the touchdown. But that point is, like, in this game against the Vikings, this should be a competitive game throughout. And if they're able to have success running, and Jacobs' line is 20 yards lower than it was last week. It's at 70 when I was looking yesterday. I think this is a scenario where we've seen good rushing offenses. It's not often. Like, you look back when they played Philly last year, Philly was able to have success on the ground against them. When they played the Packers in week 17 last year, Aaron Jones had 20 carries for 120 yards. So I do think there's pathways to build around Jacobs. But then if they go the other way, like, I can see Love as well, right? And that was the case in that week 4 game. Dontayvion Wicks got 13 targets. Christian Watson is dealing with that knee injury he got in the Saints game. So if he's out, that's more Dontayvion Wicks snaps. Jalen Reed has 80-plus receiving yards in 3 straight games against this Brian Flores defense. Like, I'm probably going to end up building pathways on both sides, run game and pass game, for Green Bay, with the assumption that one of them hits.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I'm also with you on the ground game stuff, and also, like, Green Bay is so creative in how they design their runs, and like, to your point, Minnesota is vulnerable in the same way that, like, the Chargers were vulnerable, where they, like, had these great rushing numbers, but it's like, okay, they haven't really played great rushing attacks. And the Packers have been unbelievable. And like, on their drives that are like run heavy, i.e. with more expected runs, like, they lead the NFL in points per drive. So like, they can win on the ground. It's also interesting to me, Jordan Love has some pretty drastic splits, blitz versus not. His EPA per play against the blitz is like 0. With a non-blitz is like 0.26. The Vikings are one of the blitz heaviest teams, but he also has like an 11% explosive play rate. So like, if you're getting kind of a lot of these Love explosives, then that can kind of mitigate that. And
yeah, and obviously on the Love blitz, yeah, stuff, like, that was terrible early in the season. Like, before the bye, weeks 1-9, he was 48 for 87, 510 yards, 4 touchdowns, 6 picks. Since week 11, 38 for 53, 523 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. And I, like, my assumption there is he was banged up early in the season with multiple stuff, not just the MCL, but then he hurt his groin, didn't miss any time, but he was playing through some stuff. And I think with the way he plays, where he's like throwing off his back foot, and like, it's not sound quarterback play. That the injuries did have a bigger impact on Love early in the season, and I think we've seen the last couple of weeks he's been much better. But continue your point.
That's a great shout. And like, so what we were talking about earlier of like using the full sample versus not. You're right. Like, since at the bye, he was negative 0.27 EPA per play, and since then he's gotten his average to 0, which to your point I think speaks to probably his health and the deep shots and explosive. And the Vikings have allowed plenty of yardage. They've been great in the red zone. They've been great forcing turnovers, which Love is prone to at times. But a bet on the Green Bay passing game. Dontayvion Wicks, I mean, the name is very fitting for this time of year, if you know what I mean there. But I also think on the other side of the ball, there's a question of like, how good is this Packers defense? Sam Darnold has some very, very drastic splits, depending effectively on like the defense generating disruption or not. no disruption, which like a lot of it, like that is, but for what it's worth, this is just football nerd talking, that is like extremely correlated to like scheme as we can define it. Like CJ Stroud last year, like shows up exactly the same as Brock Purdy. If you look at like 2023, where like in the non-disruption plays is one of the best in the NFL and kind of struggled elsewhere. That is to say that Darnold is going to look a lot better in spots where teams don't generate much disruption. And the Packers over the last 6 weeks have been the third best in the NFL generating disruption. And like obviously correlated to that is like their quick pressure rates for most of the season were kind of sitting in the teens. They've been 26% quick pressure over the last 6 weeks, which is just fifth in the NFL. This is, again, we don't want to talk about defenses. Like it's Jeff Atlee's first year. They're like, it is one thing. Like you see a natural progression, especially among good defensive coordinators. Now, like, do we know for certain he's good? No. But is it also a possibility? Yes. Getting a lot better. And that I think can cause some trouble just because of like how situational and just even the way Darnold plays. And like, this has been true throughout his entire career. Where like you really need him to stay in structure. He's made a couple of great plays of like stepping up in the pocket. The game winning touchdown he threw to Jefferson being a great example of that. But it's still not a guy you want working outside of structure. He takes a lot of sacks. And the Packers have done a great job with that. So I'm a little bit concerned on the Vikings offensive side. And I think that just kind of floor of success for the Packers for exactly how you started with. Like, how are they going to win? Like, is it going to be through the pass, through the run? I think that speaks to their ability to kind of win in any matchup. I like the Packers all tier a lot. I think they're going to be able to score, and I'm not so sure that the Vikings are going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, I'm on Green Bay money line. Just to get back to just finish off with the Vikings offense against the Packers defense. I think Jair Alexander's coming back this week, which does help. And similar to what we saw with Denver, it's really a pretty similar thing where they were playing not as much man coverage as Denver early in the season, but they were playing more man coverage, and that's Jeff Heffley's background. Since the bye week, they've been top in the NFL in cover two rate. We've seen more of these simulated pressure looks, kind of inverted cover two, trap cover twos, whatever, to get back and kind of get that roof over the defense. And I think a lot of that was because Alexander's been out. They've had some injuries in the secondary. They're trying to protect those guys, and they've had success with it. So I don't necessarily know if Alexander coming back changes that this week. I agree. I'm less bullish on the Vikings offense, but at the same point, we've seen Kevin O'Connell is awesome, right? So Darnold's been so good in those non-disrupted plays because of the scheme, and I think that's because, right, you have O'Connell, you have this receiving core, Hawkinson coming back, Aaron Jones at running back. Like, there's so many guys that you have to worry about taking away. So over 48.5 is something I have some interest in, too, with the Vikings being able to put up some points. Especially like Jones out of the backfield as a receiver. Justin Jefferson versus Jair Alexander has been a hotly contested debate among Packers Vikings fans. I don't think those two guys like each other a ton. And look, it doesn't. Jefferson is another one of these coverage agnostic guys. Like, he does everything. He can win downfield against single high. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL working the middle of the field. Like, it's the rare elite wide receiver who does that type of dirty work and takes big hits. And I there's just so much talent on this Vikings offense that I think they'll be able to put up some points, but I agree in general that Green Bay is the better side here.
Yeah. Green Bay alts.
Let's do it. Sunday Night Football. Falcons at Commanders. I'm going to vent again about the Eagles Commanders game on Sunday. I had a Saquon 125 plus, 2+ touchdowns, Eagles -9.5. And I'm sitting there in the first quarter, and he's like 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the Eagles are up 14-0 or whatever. And I'm like, okay, this is about as good as I could possibly feel about this. Then Jalen Hurts gets hurt. the Eagles can't get a stop. They give up a 30-yard scramble on fourth and long, and you ended up being right. Hopefully you won some money on Daniels and the Commanders.
Did win some money. That game was also just drunk in every. I mean, they were like, Washington had like 5 turnovers, yeah. And the Eagles kind of gave it back. We had drops. We had a dramatic ending. But I think almost the first thing that we talked about of like when you rely so much on your defense, it is vulnerable in some way. And like when you have a quarterback like Jaden Daniels who can mitigate so much of that, I also think that's like a main difference between 2024 and 2015 is when you're a pocket passer, you're kind of limited in that like there are only so many tight windows you can throw to. But if you're able to and there's only so long your offensive line is going to be able to protect. But if you can scramble around, which number one, just like the literal scrambles, obviously Daniels had a ton of success with, and those were so valuable, especially in high leverage moments, right? That fourth down, and then even on the final drive, he had a huge scramble for 15 yards. And then also just like buying time in the pocket, like you might find Olamide Zaccheaus just like wide open for a 50-yard touchdown on a broken play, which are the sorts of things that can happen as you extend plays. So I give Daniels credit there. I think he is like the type of quarterback that Daniels is right now is just like first read, second read, scramble. And we talked about how, and the reason why I was on him last week is that the kind of actual scramble runs were way down kind of post rib injury and then kind of shot back up in recent weeks. I don't think he's going to need to do that as much against the Falcons, who like cannot generate pressure. And also like their coverage unit has really started to struggle. Daniels has been very hit or miss deep this season. Had a couple more hits. He had that great pass to Deonte Brown in the first half. And like the week before missed Terry McLaurin on 3 wide open touchdowns. So that there's some variance there. But I think that Atlanta just cannot do enough to take Washington out of what they want to do, to take Washington out of these kind of infrastructure plays where Daniel's been great. What's intriguing to me is the other side of the ball, because and I heard a lot about just like maybe this is just kind of my bias, like what I tend to hear through the NFL news cycle and kind of analysis that goes throughout the week of like, oh, can a rookie quarterback have like rookie quarterbacks just like really tend to struggle and like can they have a lot of success? And it was just like, well, most rookie quarterbacks are not starting first off on a team that like they didn't pick they didn't pick first overall last year, and there's a reason for that. Most teams don't I guess now have their second game in week 17. First of all, like he's had a lot of reps in practice. Is also a much older quarterback because he had 3 season-ending injuries in college, which led to his long delay. Like this is not a typical situation in every dimension of it. And like it's a tiny sample. He was great last week. The Kyle Pitts interception is like, well, IPFF tracks turnover worthy plays. That was just an absolutely egregious drop. I'm not making too much of what Penix did against the Giants, but a lot of the chart stuff looks great. And like there's a real path to this offense being a lot better. And I think that Darnell Mooney especially is extremely intriguing against a Washington team, which has been better of late, but a lot of that also has to do with the opponents they've played. I mean, now all of a sudden, like their last 3 games were against Kenny Pickett, like Jake Haener and Will Levis. Like your numbers are going to look good against those teams. They got eviscerated by Cooper Rush the week before that. Not a great defense. And I think that Penix can put up some points, and like we might have a real shootout on our hands. And I like both sides of this game. I probably still side in general. Like if I had to choose something on the spread, I'd go with Washington just because like you got to try and disrupt Daniels and get him off his rhythm. And I don't think they're going to be able to do that. They haven't been able to do that all season. But I could also see the Falcons on the other side of the ball. The Washington can't stop the run. Atlanta's been really leaning into their ground game with success. Maybe that's like a an argument against the total is just like Atlanta really slows the game down and runs, but Penix looks to throw the ball downfield. This is true in college. This is true in his first start in the NFL. I think there's a real path to a lot of points being scored in this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. And Penix looked like, I know the box score wasn't great against the Giants, but he looked good. The three of his 10 incompletions were drops. The interception was a drop by Pitts, like you said. I think the ceiling of this pass game is significantly higher with Penix in there than it was with Cousins. And I think Cousins could not move. That's the first point. So you lose some extended playability. Not that Penix is a great scrambler or a great mover in general. In college, even, a lot of his damage was done from the pocket, rarely went outside the pocket. But he's able to push the ball downfield more. Cousins' arm strength was an issue as well, especially later in the season. So there is more upside against a beatable Commander secondary. And they got Marshawn Lattimore. He was playing, but he left last week's game with a calf injury. He was estimated as a DNP on the Wednesday practice before we're recording. So that's worth monitoring later in the week. But if he's out, that potentially puts St. Juice back in the lineup. St. Just is 117th at cornerback in our advanced coverage grade this year. He's struggled. So, this is a good receiving core with a quarterback who potentially elevates the passing game. The biggest concern if you're building stuff around Penix is just that the Falcons want to run the hell out of the ball.
I want to ask you this. It's the same question you posed to me about the defensive stuff. How much of, the Falcons wanting to run the ball was, oh, no, Kirk Cousins is so limited? And the Giant, what can we make of the Giants game? That game was in control. They barely ran any dropbacks in the second half. I think they had the fewest dropbacks of any team they also had two pick sixes. I think they ran the fewest dropbacks of any team in the NFL by a wide margin last week. Will the Falcons turn pass heavier now that they have a quarterback who they don't see as limited? It's really possible.
Yeah. I think that's a real path. And I think I mentioned on the pod last week, I haven't seen the lines yet, but I might have interest in Penix. And then the line came out at 233. You slacked me after the line's at 233, 234 yards. And I'm like, oh,
I was so disappointed, but they saved us.
Yeah, because he just didn't get the volume against the Giants. The Giants have a terrible pass defense. If the line comes out lower this week in a game where it's going to be much more competitive, we know the Commanders' offense is going to be able to move the ball and put up some points. That's when I'm going to have interest in Penix. And Bijan's line is probably going to be 92 or something in that realm. And I don't have a ton of interest there because they split carries with Algier. I bet Bijan 100-plus last week, and he ended on 96 just because they didn't have to give him more carries. And they weren't super efficient in the run game against the Giants. So, yeah, I have interest in the Falcons' passing game. I have interest in the Commanders' passing game. Falcons play a ton of cover three, and Terry McLaurin is third in the NFL in yards per out run against cover three behind Jamar Chase and Jaden Reed. So this is a good spot for him if he's healthy. I know he's a little bit banged up, but if he's back, I'm going to have interest in him. I'm going to have interest in both passing offenses, and hopefully we get a fun Sunday night shootout here. Last note before we move on, I know you mentioned Daniels might not have to run as much, but the Falcons have given up some big rushing games to quarterbacks, and Daniels has been running more, right? Jalen Hurts had 13 carries for 85 yards. Week one, Justin Fields had 14 carries for 57 yards. Baker Mayfield had 9 carries for 53 yards against this defense. So maybe he doesn't have to rush as much, but there's still a path for Daniels rushing overs.
Oh yeah. I think he still can run plenty.
Yeah.
If those first two reads aren't open, he's going to go. I just think that there won't necessarily be a guy he has to navigate through in the pocket. His line right now, I just saw that 47.5 for what it's worth. The average, and obviously the average is going to be skewed by a game like last week, is averaging 49. Don't hate that look.
And I threw it in here. He's had 9-plus carries in the last three games. It's the first time that's happened since weeks 1 to 3. So he is
looking. Yeah, that's what we outlined on the pod last week about Daniels is looking to run a lot more. And if you're modeling this, again, full season's worth of data is not really revealing, because this is a guy who dealt with a rib injury and wasn't looking to run the ball for about 8 weeks of the season. Like, that's a huge sample of games that are not so relevant for the style of play of Jaden Daniels in week 17, much healthier.
We'll wrap up quickly with Monday Night Football, and this is disappointing because it's a rematch of the NFC Championship game, but one team's out of the playoffs and doesn't really have a ton to play for. Both teams are banged up, but I do think there's some interesting angles here, because with the Lions, I think down the stretch and through the playoffs, the Lions are going to have to outscore teams. I have real concerns about their defense and how all the injuries starting to pile up on their defense are going to impact the efficiency numbers that we've seen through much of the year have been really good. You look at their pass defense specifically, weeks 1 to 12, first in the NFL in EPA per play allowed as a pass defense. Last 3 weeks, that drops all the way to 30th. Right, you get the Bills in there. You get, I mean, the Bears last week had a lot of success through the air against this Lions defense, and they've really struggled as a passing offense for much of the year. So, especially with the way that Detroit plays on defense, they're the biggest man coverage team in the NFL. Carlton Davis is out now, your top cornerback. You lose Aleem McNeil for the season. You're already down Aiden Hutchinson. They've struggled to get quick pressure in recent weeks. So that just puts more stress on these cornerbacks in man coverage situations. And look, I know the 49ers haven't been great this year against man coverage. That's typically something we see that they're excellent at. But like, I think there's pathways to success for them to put up points. And then I really see no reason the 49ers are going to be able to stop Detroit in this game.
Yeah, I'm fully with you there. This is a team that has been allowing the highest rate of explosive plays over the last 6 weeks. That's even worse over the last month. And it's just like, to your point of like how this, and I think we've discussed this in the past, of like, this is a Lions team which wants to run a lot of man coverage. Also, talk about teams changing their patterns. They have not. Each of the last 3 weeks, they've been 50 to 55% man coverage. Like, you can win that way if you're generating pressure, and you can get all very creative if your cornerbacks are winning matchups. But Terrion Arnold and Amik Robertson are just not the guys you want to line up against Juwan Jennings and Debo Samuel. And also George Kittle from the slot presents another problem. I'm with you. I think the Niners can move the ball here. Yeah. These guys are all still playing. Brock Purdy's playing for a contract. Like, this is not, I'm not worried about the motivation here. I think they're going to be able to move the ball. Can the Lions kind of lead the scoring? Absolutely. Would it be shocking for the Lions to score 40 points? No, they're the Lions. They're an awesome team. I just also see this as a spot, and there's a reason the total's at 50.5 for the Niners to have plenty of success.
Yeah, and the Niners are super banged up on the offensive line. Trent Williams is out. It sounds like Jalen Moore and Aaron Banks.
Who's generating pressure?
Yeah. It's Zadarius Smith, and that's it.
Yeah, it's Zadarius Smith.
So, yeah. Like, I'm not super concerned about it. I just wanted to point out the Niners, especially on the left side of their offensive line, super thin right now. But I'm with you on the passing game, and I think they're going to have to pass. Like, they're also decimated at running back. We already did the Patrick Taylor thing. I don't know if Grindo comes back this week, but I think they go pass heavier. And the one note on the Detroit defense, they've allowed fewer receiving yards than any other defense in the NFL to tight ends this year. You look back at the NFC Championship game last year, Kittle only had 2 catches for 27 yards. Like, he's been their primary target. Can he still win? Absolutely. He's awesome. But I think they might try to put Brian Branch on him more. That's their best coverage defender. So, like, I have more interest in Jennings and Samuel. And then on the other side of the ball, you can build Detroit onslaughts pretty much every week, but this week especially. Like, if San Francisco is scoring and pushing Detroit, that's when I start to like golf passing over as Amon-Ra St. Brown. But I think regardless of what happens, Jahmyr Gibbs rushing, he had 27 touches last week against the Bears. They didn't rotate in Reynolds or Vaki a ton. Like, he's in more of that true lead role. And I think they're going to keep it that way unless it's a blowout and they try to save some touches on him. And this is a 49ers run defense that has been beatable all year. So it's a spot where I like Gibbs rushing and then Jameson Williams receiving. Like the last 5 weeks, San Francisco's been second in single high coverage rate. So that's something Williams has killed all year, has had the 80-yard touchdown last week. Like even these intermediate to deep crossers is something that he has had a lot of success with against single high coverage. So regardless of game script, I like Gibbs and Williams, but I think you can build out some more robust SGPs as well.
Yeah, I like that too. The only thing I'll add on the game script point is ask yourself how they got into that game script in the first place.
Yeah.
Right? Like if they're up, you know, 35-10 at the end of the third quarter, how do they score those 35 points? It's probably, they're on much narrower distribution now. You like take out David Montgomery and all of a sudden it's fairly centralized.
Yeah, I mean,
like
the
Gibbs and Sam Brown and then like maybe some Laporta, some Jameson Williams on the deep balls and like maybe some Tim Patrick. But this is, they're so good on offense that there are not that many maths to feed relative to how much offensive success they can have.
The biggest bet I won this year was the Lions beating the Jaguars by 40 points. So I guess that proves the point. That's all we got for this week. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of their holiday week, their holiday weekend. We'll be back here next week with week 18 and some playoff clinching scenarios, hopefully. Talk to you later.